Tomas, we are back, my friend. You know what that means? Enough out of you. We've got this man in the house, Victor Jones. Hear me out. How are you, Victor?
Oh, yeah. Tom, Tony, Tasty Nation, how you doing? I'm doing great, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Got that Tar Heel baby blue on.
Thomas,
how are you? Day or what?
I have never been better. I was going to wear my Tar Heel baby blue today, but I didn't.
I can't see it, man. I can't see it. You maybe you own like one quarter zip baby blue thing in your sweater.
He does. I do.
I own one.
I
He's
feel
been
like
venturing
you
out.
I don't really wear blue, but I do have a Cubs thing.
Cubs thing. God, his language is just, I mean, it's yeah. The words
for
he uses
great
are
content,
just,
that,
I'm
that
taking
it back.
That
vocabulary is absolutely beautiful.
You know, it's a Cubs like pullover or whatever.
All right, gentlemen, before we get into the meat and potatoes, is this a little, from a future standpoint, is this a little buyable dip intraday here? I mean, NASDAQ, they had everything. The NASDAQ was up 1%. Russell was up 1.25%. I know you hate percentages, and I refuse to quote this in points, so I do not care. And we've cut that in half. Is this a little buyable dip here intraday, gentlemen?
Oh, yeah, I think it is, but I don't. I think it is, but I'm not buying it yet with Tony's money yet.
Mm.
Don't listen to what he's saying. Listen to what here. I'm thinking.
I haven't bought anything yet. I'll just leave it there.
Oh, way to put your money where your mouth
is. Weird day. I am curious. I saw something earlier today. I don't want to say who it's from, just in case you guys trash this. I don't want to put that person's name on this. But they had brought up the Golden Cross. You guys, I'm sure you're familiar with the Golden Cross. It's when like the 50 shorter term period moving average, like the 50 period moving average crosses the 200 period moving average. Their point was that the VIX has now had a Golden Cross. The 50 period has crossed above the 200 period moving average. What they were really just trying to say is we've had a structural uptrend in volatility over the last couple of weeks. But I got a little bit of a bone to pick with this, because technical analysis on volatility to me is an absolute no-no. I'm just curious, what is the president and vice president of volatility? What do you two have to say about trying to apply technical analysis to the VIX or VIX?
Well, I'm really impressed that whoever wrote that just took their first course in technical analysis. That's so cute. And now they're trying to like figure it out. I remember years ago when Slimmy was giving us a lesson in candlesticks, and he would be sitting there and going, and then we would tease him mercilessly for like weeks afterwards, like, oh, is this an abandoned baby? Is this a gravestone doji? Is this a shooting star? You know, like it's, I find it very cute when people discover technical analysis for the first time and then try to back into like, oh my God, it's a golden cross. It's not a golden cross, it's a death cross. You know, and so the bottom line is it's all bullshit, complete garbage. I mean, if it gets you. No, I know what he's saying. He's
charting volatility.
I understand.
I would venture to say that most of them don't even use the right product, and you can't do it for a long term because VIX is so many different.
The problem with VIX, the problem with VIX is just the structure of the like the reason you can't really do it in that. Because first of all, most people, like Tony said, most people don't understand that volatility is a spot volatility is actually a futures product, and the VIX is a forward product. So the VIX settles to the next expiration, so it's really pretty meaningless. But if somebody said that using spot volatility, it would give it a little more credibility. But just what they wrote about Golden Cross and VIX immediately disqualifies them as I would say, as either a novice or knowledge-less.
Well, I would all of a sudden, all of a sudden he found his words.
So you're more than welcome to tell them what I said, but you know, listen, don't golden death cross me. You know, the VIX is, you know, the VIX had one uptick. Let's not get too excited here.
We have moved off those lows at 12%, now at 16%. I sort of know the answer, but just before I move on to my other question, I want to ask this again. Where's the best range for VIX from your guys' opinion? You can use spot or
as a trader, as a trader, the VIX, as a option trader, the best range on the low end, I would say, would be like the average low end would be 17 and a half, but the best range would be 20 to 25, with 22 being perfect VIX for trading. 22, 22 and a half, absolutely perfect VIX for you want the best of all worlds, 22 and a half VIX.
One day, if future hear me out, we should do that, because I had a discussion with a gentleman, and his point was, once you get into the 17s or 18s, you're elevated, but you're elevated, generally speaking, for a reason, with high likelihood of slipping into the lower 20s, historically speaking. So one of these days, we'll do a deeper dive into that. That is not what I came here to talk about.
Yeah, you're going to need new friends. Go ahead.
Gentlemen, I came here to ask you, when are you booking your trips to China?
Why would we go to China? We can go to Japan. It's way cheaper.
Yeah.
That is very true. But who knows if a Chinese yuan devaluation is on the horizon. That's the whispers. I am asking that because it seems everybody in their mothers is going over to China, whether it's Blinken, whether it's Secretary Janet Yellen, or just a few days ago, Elon Musk took a surprise visit. I don't know
And our very own Kai went to China 2 weeks ago, too.
But I don't understand what is your question here? I'm missing this.
What's going on with China? Why are all these people going to China?
Why are people going to China?
No, I'm laying down the premise. Let me work through this, my good friends. Don't worry, baby bird, I'll feed you.
Okay.
I'm sort of fascinated by this trip that Elon Musk just took specifically to China. He went over there and he spoke with effectively their vice president. He's called the premier, the number two in charge over there, and got a deal in place, an in-principle deal for autonomous driving in China. The reason this is fascinating to me, for maybe two or three reasons. The first is the knock on Elon in autonomous driving in America is that the idea that they could, robotaxi in particular, that they could get a new vehicle out and get approval to put them on the road in the United States within 2 years was maybe not the highest probability. And this was built into a very negative narrative in Tesla. So you give it a few weeks, Elon Musk goes over to China, he gets a in-principle deal with China to allow autonomous vehicles in China instead of the US, and all of a sudden you've got a completely different narrative in Tesla. I know you don't care about analyst ratings, but like Cantor Fitzgerald just initiated coverage at overweight with a $230 price target. All of a sudden, people love the damn stock, which is so funny how quickly the tide turns. But I'm curious what you think as an entrepreneur and an investor. Right now, China is a bit of a competitor at best, adversary at worst. And I wonder what you think from an entrepreneur standpoint and an opportunist standpoint, going over to China, doing business with a strong competitor, somebody that Janet Yellen is and Blinken has said that they are effectively driving over capacity. They're building too many vehicles. They're effectively dumping on the marketplace. Europe has a problem with this as well. Elon obviously has to make money. He's got to find a way to sell these cars. What is your point of view as an entrepreneur and opportunist going and doing business with an adversary in the way that Elon Musk just did and was able to kind of change the short-term narrative of the stock?
Well, the first mistake that I think the way you said that, it's actually not correct. I don't consider them an adversary at all. And I think for the first time, China woke up and understands that in order, the EV business in China is a huge part of their future. And I think that what China realized when they kind of came to their senses with all this was a couple things. A, we need Tesla in order for our EV business to be successful, because they were the innovators. We need their products, And we need the general validation that they give us in order for our EV business to be successful. Because if our EV business in the US is successful, then China's EV business will be massively successful. And they have global reach just like we do. So they can ship their cars to anywhere in the world and they can be a dominant player. But they need Tesla's validation. And at first, everybody tried to run this thing alone. Elon was smart enough to know that doesn't make any sense. And we're in a different kind of global economy right now. So let's make this into a global play and we all benefit. And that's exactly what happened here. And so I think that, you know, listen, we have a lot of incredibly stupid politicians in this country that believe that you have to, you know, set up all these trade barriers and restrictions and that, you know, trade is unfair and you have to tax it and all this kind of stuff. That is not the way you grow an economy. You grow an economy by you make deals. And you validate each other's products. If you're Elon right now, just like you said, there's been a lot of bad press regarding EV vehicles. And there were a lot of people in this country that wanted to bury Tesla and bury EV. And all of a sudden, when China starts to make an explosive part of their economy and Tesla bounces back, all of a sudden EV goes right back to the good part of the headlines and the business is good globally. So this was actually a very smart move. I mean, the Chinese government has not made very many smart moves, in my opinion, with respect to how they've supported their businesses. And this was one of the smart ones. Basically, you know, collaborating with Elon is exactly what they should have done. And Elon collaborating with them is what they should have done. And this validates both their businesses and it validates the global growth. So the answer to the question is, I think this is a smart move by everybody.
To your point that I stated it wrong, just really quickly, the way I framed it was at best, they're a competitor, and at worst, they're called an adversary. So, and I say this because there was actually just a poll that was released, Tom. As many as 42% of Americans see China as an enemy of the United States, which is up from just 25% 2 years ago. And for the fifth year in a row, 4 out of 5 Pew Research respondents viewed China unfavorably, while 43% held unfavorable opinions.
It's much more about stupid politicians than it is about reality. The reality is that if you say the same poll to half of America, we'd go, oh, there's nothing wrong with Putin and there's nothing wrong with Russia, you know, but yet China we have a problem with. It's so ridiculous. It's called, I mean, we tackle that through education and we tackle that through knowledge. You know, listen, I'm not a huge fan of China myself. But in order for the U.S. economy to grow, we need to trade with China and we need to aggressively trade with China. I mean, the U.S., there's only so many places you can grow globally. And when you're the market leader in everything, you want to be everywhere. And that's essentially, you know, where we are. So the idea that people, I mean, they don't want to trade with China because it's just China does a really bad job at their own PR. But if you talk to Elon right now, you'd see, hey, this is how important this marketplace is.
All right. I'm going to end this segment with a little pop quiz. We're going to have a little fun at the end of this segment. You guys ready to do this?
Sure.
What's a Model 3 cost in the United States? U.S. dollars.
Well, it keeps moving around all the time, but I'm going to say right now, I'm going to go $45,000.
Base model.
Okay. Base model.
Tony?
41,000.
Yeah, I was going to say 42.5 base model.
I think you're close. I had around 39,000.
Okay.
Chat can check me if you're wrong. Check okay, me if I'm wrong. Fine. But I had around 39,000. You guys were really close. Mm-hmm. In Singapore, they only sell one Tesla, one model of Tesla. It's a Model 3. What do you think it costs in Singapore?
100
in Sing dollars, by the way.
Sing dollars? Sing dollars or US dollars?
Sing dollars.
So Sing dollars are 75 cents of the dollar, right? Yes.
179,500. Tony?
I'm gonna
because I know the taxes is three times.
He knows.
Yeah.
He's got like a Singaporean lady down there or something like that he takes care of because he's too good with these numbers. He's way too good.
I'm sticking 100.
He knows how much apartments are.
I'm sticking 100.
He knows how much cars are. He knows how much shoes are. He's got a lot of things. Like, I had no idea.
But I'm a market maker, Vic. I'm saying 179,500 Sing dollars.
Got a Gumata over there.
What is it?
You're pretty close. It's right around $200,000. It's right around $200,000. But let's just to be care to be.
But how
clear,
much is a bottle of alcohol there? It's like $1,000, isn't it?
No,
it's not apples to apples. So here's what it is: in Singapore, you have to buy a COE to earn a vehicle. So that $200,000 is inclusive of the market price of a COE, a 10-year COE, which is the license to own a vehicle, and that is right around $95,000. And the rest of that is the price of the vehicle. Now, they only sell the Model 3 because the steering wheels are on the other side in Singapore. And so the Model 3 is the only version of the car that Tesla has chosen to create the car with a steering wheel on the other side. Cybertruck, the Model S, the Model X, they have not. So it's the only one that's actually international, and in Singapore, nearly $200,000. That's your fun fact of the day, gentlemen.
Good job out of you, my friend. I like the pop quiz at the end. Pay attention.
Interesting. I knew cars in Singapore were like four, you know, three, at least 3x. So I knew they were crazy expensive.
It's 6 million people in a tiny island. The COE is effectively a way to moderate how many people have vehicles so that it's not so congested. Another fun fact for you.
Are you allowed to live in the car?
Oh, you cannot. Not in Singapore, you can't.
For that price, man, you should be
able to, right? Right. I mean, it would be my office, that's for sure. All right, we're going to take a quick 90-second break and come back. We got more Tasty Live after this with the market measure next. See you, Vic. Be well.
No chance can you live in a car in Singapore.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Live, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.